At this point, I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Douglas Opel. Doug is an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics at the University of Washington School of Medicine and an investigator at the Center for Clinical and Translational Research at the Tremont Katz Center for Pediatric Bioethics at Seattle's Children's Research Institute. He's also a practicing general pediatrician at both Seattle Children's Hospital and the University of Washington Medical Center Roosevelt Clinic. And Dr. Opel's talk is entitled Taking Talk to the Next Level, in Search of Communication Practices That Increase Parental Immunization Acceptance. So Dr. Opel, thank you for being on, and I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Thanks very much, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here, albeit virtually. This is a new presentation format for me, so I hope you all can hear me, first of all, and have no problem following along. But I'm also looking forward to the question and answer session that follows my talk here. So if there's any issues, I'd be happy to address it then. And as Nick did, I'm really impressed of the number of participants that are joining this session, and I feel quite honored to participate in it. So my intent really for the next 20 minutes is to convey some of the research I have done regarding communication with parents about immunizations in the primary care pediatric setting. And after listening to Nick's talk, some of the research that I'm doing actually gets to these issues that Nick identified that we need to take, these next steps we need to take in both immunization research and communication research with parents, particularly vaccine hesitant parents. So I hope to tie some of the things that Nick mentioned in his talk in mine as well. So I will just start by saying I have no financial relationships or affiliations to disclose. And this is a glimpse of what I'd like to cover over the next 20 minutes. I want to begin with a brief discussion of what I think are the current gaps in provider immunization communication with vaccine hesitant parents, and follow that with two empirical approaches that my research team and I have embarked upon to start to address these gaps. And as part of that discussion, I'll convey some preliminary results of these empirical approaches and discuss the next steps needed in those research studies that we're currently doing as we speak. So to begin then, let's talk about current gaps in our understanding of provider communication with vaccine hesitant parents. I think the most glaring gap is that there really is no standard clinical approach for how we ought to communicate with parents who have either concerns about childhood vaccines or who may want to delay or refuse some immunizations. I'm a general pediatrician, as Chris said, and I, you know, interface with a lot of my colleagues frequently, and one of the things that I'm most amazed is that every one of us talks with the vaccine hesitant parents and approaches the vaccine hesitant parent, you know, at least somewhat differently. I see evidence of this lack of a communication standard in my practice, but I also see it in sort of what we're reading in the press and the coverage of how divergent the approaches out there are regarding the care of vaccine hesitant parents. And you may have read, at least in the U.S., you know, some pediatricians have received some attention for choosing to fire parents who refuse immunizations, while other pediatricians sort of stand up and say, I disagree with that approach and advocate for a more open communication technique that seeks to maintain a therapeutic relationship. But I think this illustrates, I mean, these two different approaches really illustrate that there really isn't a standard here, and I think that's a huge issue that we need to address. A chief reason, I think, for the lack of a communication standard is due to the second gap, that there are really minimal data regarding not only how pediatricians currently communicate with vaccine hesitant parents about immunization, but more importantly, what constitutes effective provider communication with vaccine hesitant parents. We really don't know what to say that is effective, that really will influence parents' beliefs positively and change their vaccination behavior. And without a robust evidence base, it's really difficult to move forward with activities like problem assessment, communication training, and standardization. So as a result of these gaps, I think conversations with parents who have concerns about immunizations are suboptimal. And if we look at data from exploratory and qualitative studies, sort of this emerging empirical evidence of both vaccine hesitant parents and primary care providers, we see evidence of this suboptimal communication. Investigators have found that parents find it difficult to have an open discussion and report feeling alienated when vaccines are discussed with their primary care provider. And investigators have found that providers themselves also tend to say little to parents about immunizations and frequently validate parental concerns and even discredit parental sources of immunization information. So just some evidence of how suboptimal the communication can be between parents and their child's provider on immunizations. Now, there are a lot of reasons to improve upon suboptimal communication, but I think it really takes on special significance when we consider that providers are the most influential factor in a parent's immunization decision-making. Nick did a great job of laying out all the potential factors that are influential in a parent's decision to or not to vaccinate their child. And part of that was their interface with the healthcare system, and particularly their interface and trust and recommendation of their child's doctor. This is data from one of Deb Gust's studies at the CDC. She used a survey of a national sample of parents and asked those parents who indicated that they initially planned to delay or not get a vaccination for their child but changed their mind, why they changed their mind. And you can see the results. Almost 40% responded that they changed their mind because of information or assurances from their child's doctor. So more than any other response, parents who changed their mind did so after talking with their child's doctor. And this has been corroborated in several other studies, the importance of the child's provider in a parent's immunization decision making. So if we're to capitalize on this influence, I would argue that we ought to understand better what kind of communication leads to this outcome of parents changing their minds. So this led me to the following hypothesis. If we can improve our communication with parents, I think we can improve their acceptance of child's vaccine. Specifically, I think if we understand what constitutes effective communication with vaccine-hesitant parents, then I think we have a good chance at improving parental acceptance of childhood immunizations and positively influencing their vaccination attitudes and beliefs. So to test this hypothesis, my research team and I have embarked on sort of two research paths that may seem disparate, but they're very much connected. Both are aimed at determining what constitutes effective immunization communication. I'll talk about each of them sequentially. I'll start with the first approach. And the first approach makes the assumption, as I write here, that maybe despite the lack of a really robust evidence base, as Nick mentioned, there's a lot of emerging evidence. And in this arena of what constitutes effective provider communication, I think that holds too. We have some evidence, but not a lot. But maybe the evidence that we do have suggests that some communication strategies might very well be effective. And maybe the problem is not that we don't know what to say, really. It's just that we aren't using these communication strategies. Providers aren't adopting them. And therefore, we're not seeing an impact on parents' vaccination behavior. So maybe what we ought to do is improve provider adoption of these communication strategies we think work and that early evidence suggests might work, and then test whether they are indeed effective. And so that's the research approach number one there that we've taken. The second approach takes a little different tact and assumes sort of the opposite. Maybe we do not have enough solid evidence. I mean, there is some early evidence, but maybe it's not robust enough yet to commit to any particular communication strategy as effective going forward. And what we first need is more formative work to provide and round out this evidence base. So strategy two takes the tact that we need to gather this additional evidence before we can decide what constitutes effective communication. So I'll talk about both of these and start with the first. Now, I initially had a more detailed slide here going through the communication strategy we developed as part of this first approach, but since we're in the active phase of testing this strategy and fear of contamination of the results, I sort of refrain from doing that. But let me walk through the communication strategy we developed because it's, I think, helpful to hear just what one group, my group, is doing with respect to communication with vaccine-hesitant parents. So what we did is we got a bunch of people together here in Seattle, where I am, from several disciplines relevant to immunization communication. So folks from public health, local and state, as well as experts in social marketing, pediatrics, infectious disease, and others. And we developed a communication toolkit for primary care pediatric providers that really drew upon this early emerging available evidence, as well as consensus recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics and the CDC regarding communication with vaccine hesitant parents. So essentially operationalized all that we had and put it in the form of an algorithm and a toolkit to help navigate these conversations that providers were having with vaccine hesitant parents. And the centerpiece of this toolkit was what we call the AAA guidelines, which refers to three words: ask, the first A, acknowledge, the second A, and the third A is advise. So ask, acknowledge, advise. Now, again, this is a simple algorithm that really is meant to provide a helpful communication platform for providers to use during immunization conversations with parents. And it really is meant to mirror, again, the American Academy's recommendations and the CDC's recommendations for how we ought to have these conversations with vaccine hesitant parents. And for instance, this ask, acknowledge, advise conveys what the AAP and CDC want providers to convey in these conversations: a sincerity, a willingness to listen, et cetera. But let me walk you through this algorithm just a little bit more. So the first step in the algorithm, the ask step, is really a step to encourage providers to ask the parents what questions they have about the immunization schedule. So early evidence suggests that that's what parents want. They want us to solicit and welcome their questions. And again, this is also what CDC recommends we do. For those parents who have concerns or are hesitant, the next step is the acknowledge step. So encourages providers to acknowledge their concerns. And again, this mirrors early evidence suggesting parents want us to acknowledge their feelings and emotions on this issue. The last step in the algorithm, the advice step, instructs clinicians to provide them with advice tailored to the specific concerns that the parents mention. Now, as part of this algorithm and the toolkit, we provide example statements for each of these communication steps. So, for example, in the acknowledge step, we provide the clinician with a potential acknowledge statement to say. So one example was, many parents, such as yourself, have these same questions and concerns. I'm glad you mentioned them. Or, I know that you want to do what's best for your child, and so do I, so I'm happy to talk more about these concerns with you. So those are examples of acknowledge steps, example statements. I will also say that if a parent, after asking, doesn't have any concerns, the algorithm still fits with those non-hesitant parents, but just takes a different form. So, for instance, the acknowledge step for non-hesitant parents takes the form of encouraging physicians to support them in their decision to follow the immunization schedule, saying something like, this is the single most important way for you to protect your child from serious disease. I'm glad you're making it. And the advice step takes the form of encouraging non-hesitant parents to be proactive about asking others around them whether they are immunized. This refers to Nick's issue of the status quo. We're trying to change the status quo here, not have those parents who are immunizing their kids be a silent majority, but have them actively and proactively ask others, parents of kids that are around their own kids, are your kids immunized? And if not, why not? So apart from those AAA guidelines and example statements, other components of this toolkit include the following. So there are common questions in the toolkit that providers can read, and there are sample responses that providers can look to review prior to their conversation with a parent. So one common question we list, what are the pros and cons of vaccines? Another is, what are the long-term side effects of vaccines? Essentially, we try to list the most common questions that parents might bring to these immunization conferences and provide a sample response that the provider can tailor to the parent if need be. We also provide the immunization schedules in this toolkit, as well as an easily decipherable graph depicting the minimal ages and intervals between doses. And then importantly, we have a section for providers in which they can go to for further reading, and both print material as well as web-based material, and resources they can point parents to, so both print and web-based materials if parents would like them. And then lastly, we have smart phrases, which are electronic medical record tools that we developed to document these vaccine conversations between provider and parent, and allows the provider to enter the immunization chart and a list of vaccine-related resources into the patient's after-visit summary. So the step we're currently at now is to test whether this communication strategy, again, the one that sort of embodies what the evidence we have and the recommendations by national organizations before communicating with vaccine hesitant parents to test whether this is actually effective in a controlled setting. So we've randomly assigned about 25 practices in the Puget Sound area to receive this intervention. And so these intervention practices, in order to ensure provider adoption or improve provider adoption, we're using sort of an intervention based on academic detailing of these providers at these practices. And this will include a lunchtime group training, frequent follow-up visits to those practices and to the doctors there, phone calls with the practices and physicians, technical assistance for these practices, really to reinforce the communication strategy, overcome barriers to providers using this communication strategy, answer their questions about how to use it, given certain nuances after they start using it with their parents. And then to do this for 6 months after the training to ensure continued use over that time. And then the control group will simply do communication immunization visits per their standard of care, and will sample baseline practice and patient data from these control practices. Now, the primary outcome here will be parental vaccine hesitancy as measured by a valid and reliable tool that we've also developed called the Parent Attitudes About Childhood Vaccine Survey. And we'll sample parents at baseline 1 month and 6 months in both of these groups and see if we can detect larger improvements in their hesitancy in the intervention group than in the control group. So this is going on right now, and in the next year we should have some preliminary data with respect to whether this communication strategy that embodies really the evidence we have now with how we ought to talk with parents who have concerns, whether that's effective. So that's research strategy number one. Now let me transition quickly to the second immunization, or the second approach we are taking. And again, the second approach we decided to embark on because while there is a lot of face validity and early evidence for the communication strategy that's underlying these AAA guidelines, so this communication strategy I just gone through, there really is little robust empirical data, aside from, you know, fundamental communication principles, to support this strategy. So we thought, well, it's quite possible that these consensus recommendations aren't as effective at changing parents' behavior, immunization behavior, as we thought, and what we need is more data on this before we move forward. So we embarked on a pilot study to understand first what are doctors saying with vaccine hesitant parents currently, real time. We realized there was a lot of data regarding parent attitudes and beliefs after and before visits with their child's doctor, lots of data detailing provider attitudes about how things went during the visit, but no one really had actually looked at the visit itself where these immunization discussions were happening. So we decided to do that, and we used the methodology of videotaping these conversations where they happen at well child visits in doctors' offices, simply to first characterize the communication behaviors providers are using with vaccine hesitant parents, realizing that's a necessary first step before we can identify ones that are potentially effective and test then whether they are actually effective. We used a qualitative technique called conversation analysis to study what was said, and I've teamed up with two sociologists who have really developed this technique and already use it in the primary care setting. And the objective really is to piece out every part of the interaction between a doctor and patient, and really try to find a couple statements or ways of phrasing things that might be important to changing the ways parents view immunizations. Now, before I talk about the results of this preliminary study, I do want to point out the limitations of this study. I mean, it was a pilot. It was only involved a small sample. We had 20 videotaped encounters involving 9 different doctors. There was likely a Hawthorne effect because when we recruited providers and parents for this pilot study, we told them we were not only videotaping them, but videotaping, and we were interested in understanding how they talked about immunizations with each other. And so they very well could be talking differently than they normally would, knowing that they're being videotaped. And then also, importantly, we didn't distinguish between whether this was the first discussion this parent was having with their child's provider or whether it was a subsequent discussion. I think because vaccine conversations are a longitudinal issue and the first vaccine discussion might be very different than subsequent vaccine discussions, we have to sort of keep that in mind that we didn't make that distinction here. We just simply looked at all comers, even though that's a potentially important issue to account for in subsequent studies. So despite these limitations, we found several interesting communication behaviors that providers use when discussing immunizations with hesitant parents, and I want to talk about two of those here. The first was how a provider introduces the topic of immunizations with the parent. And I think this is a potentially important communication practice because it affects really the nature and extent of a parent's response and participation in that immunization discussion. We found that providers initiated the topic of immunizations in one of two ways. One way was using a very participatory format, which involved asking parents if they want to have their child vaccinated. So an example participatory format that providers we found used was this: did you want to get some vaccines for her today? Or so what are we going to do about vaccines today? Or how do you feel about vaccination? So in each of these examples, the question format linguistically licenses and even demands a parent participate in the vaccination process by making a decision or voicing an opinion, answering the question. In contrast, some providers used a non-participatory or what I call presumptive format, which didn't involve asking a question. It instead involved asserting a position regarding vaccination. So an example of that was, it's time to start all those vaccines. We're going to be doing two live vaccines today, the MMR and the chickenpox. So unlike the question format, this assertion format, I think, linguistically constrains parents' participation because it doesn't allow them to voice an opinion necessarily. It merely licenses their acknowledgement of the assertion made. The second, I think, interesting communication practice we found was how a provider elicits the parent's questions about immunizations in an encounter. So this relates So we found two formats here again that providers use. One was a query designed to encourage discussion. So an example of that was an open-ended questions like, what questions do you guys have? Another was, the format used was a query designed to discourage discussion. An example of that was, so any questions about the shots? And I think the difference between these two formats is a little bit more subtle than the participatory and presumptive. But the negative polarity item or word any in that, so any questions about the shots, really prefigures a no response and thus discourages parents' participation more so than an open-ended question like, what questions do you guys have? Now, I'll say here that I'm not making a claim that one format is better than the other in either whether in how providers initiate a discussion or elicit a parent's question. I'm simply describing how providers currently do things with the idea that we can maybe make some hypotheses moving forward about which ones might be better, and then test whether they actually are better. Do they actually improve a child's immunization status over time? So this gets to the next step. If that pilot study that I just described is now completed, we are currently enrolling a larger and more diverse sample of providers and parents in order to ensure we have an adequate description of current communication practices, both the two that I described, as well as four or five others during the immunization conversation at well-child visits. The next step, though, that I think is the linchpin here, is that we'll then embark on a longitudinal cohort study of new parents over three well-child visits, and we'll follow the communication patterns that providers say, and we'll look for the ones that we've identified in step one, and then link those communication practices that are mentioned over those three well-child visits to the child's immunization record at 9 months, which will be a way of determining which communication practices are associated with an increased parental immunization acceptance. And we'll control for a certain number of other factors that might be confounding that association. And then last, assuming we find one or two ways of phrasing things or statements, can we train doctors to use these effective communication practices? And we'll obviously need to design and test an intervention to do that, much like the randomized controlled trial I mentioned to you earlier. So in conclusion, what I hope to have conveyed in this talk is not only the gaps that exist in immunization communication and why those gaps need to be addressed, but how my research team is really attempting to do that by augmenting the evidence base for specific immunization communication practices. And this gets to, I think, what Nick was mentioning, the needs in research that in the next steps we need to take in research and communication science to understand how best to address this issue of vaccine hesitancy. And we're attempting to do that by being both comprehensive and innovative. So the first approach I mentioned, it's a cluster randomized controlled trial to test the efficacy, effectiveness of a communication toolkit. So a fairly comprehensive way of doing that. And the, and there's some innovation in this second approach. I mean, direct observation or videotaping is not a new methodology, but it is to this issue of vaccine hesitancy. No one has really looked at the used this methodology to look at what's going on in that conversation, and so it's fairly innovative and from that standpoint. And also, I mentioned we can't just look at a single encounter to understand what is effective in our conversations with parents. It's a longitudinal issue, our conversations with parents regarding immunizations, and so we need to study it longitudinally. And in approach two, we intend to do that over several visits, well-child visits, where these conversations are happening. And then what's great about immunization work is you have a clinically relevant outcome at your disposal, a child's immunization status, and so our intent is really to link communication practices to that clinically relevant outcome, to determine what constitutes effective communication. So, because ultimately what we want to do is improve parental acceptance and change their vaccination behavior and get their children immunized. And so that's a really robust, clinically relevant outcome to use to link to communication practices. That's not often available in communication research. So in that sense, this is innovative and exciting as well. So I'd like to acknowledge the following people and funding sources for this work, and we'll be happy to take questions in the question and answer session. Thanks very much.